Episode 3 of the Sales Change Podcast. So we're interviewing Martin King, no relation. That's not his surname. We just have to clear that up. We understand who are Goodwater and what makes them different to other water treatment companies. We understand what makes an entrepreneur, whether it's detail-driven or visionary. Martin started from the bottom of the business. We tried to understand how that benefited him when he got to the top. We also talk about the future of the water treatment industry and how Goodwater engage their staff and keep them involved in the direction of the business. We also slightly touch on how technology will shape our children's future. And we also ask Martin the Sales Change 5 questions. Remember, if you do like the podcast, go on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform, rate us 5 stars, leave us a comment, and hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Sales Change Podcast, Martin. So, you manage Goodwater. Tell me about Goodwater.
Well, we were founded in 1988 by my recently retired boss to be a good water treatment company. The majority of the businesses around that time, so I'm told, were not. We provide specialist services to the building services sector in the main, and also to some end user clients. And most of our work is business to business. We're very much invested in our people. We consider our people to be our biggest asset. For me, the old adage that people buy from people still remains current today, even though there's an awful lot of online shopping that that people indulge in. We have a turnover in excess of 4.5 million. We employ around about 50 staff. We're UK-based. We operate nationally. The majority of our business, however, is in the southeast and London. We're involved from the design and concept stage of construction all the way through to the actual building going up, through to maintenance, and then when the building's demolished and restarted. A lot of our business is built around long-term contracts, and that's given us the stability to be where we are today.
And you're a very unique guest on the podcast because you are my former boss.
That's right.
So what makes your company different within your industry? What's so special about Goodwater that is completely different from any other company that's in the water treatment industry?
I think for me, the biggest thing is that we're not just about the sale. We're about giving the right solution and the right advice to our clients. Experience has told us that if we do that, that builds trust. And when we've built the trust in our clients, then we tend to find that the sale follows quite easily afterwards. We don't have to sell it. They trust us.
I think that's the key in business-to-business selling, building the relationship. And we were having a chat with yesterday with Employ, who are recruitment specialists. I think building the relationship and understanding somebody else's business is important because it breeds trust and it shows integrity. If you're blindly trying to sell them a product which they don't need, you're not going to go very far.
As your former boss, we share the same ideas in that respect.
So the company was started in the 80s and you worked for Martin, who is now recently retired. What was special about Martin?
How do I say this without without running him down? He's very much an entrepreneur, so he's an ideas man. He didn't like to get involved in the nitty gritty and the detail.
The best people avoid the detail and are, how do I say this, unique in their ability to get people to do what they want without actually doing it themselves.
I disagree.
Really?
I think you need both. Need both. You can have all the ideas in the world, but if somebody doesn't bring those to life, what's the point of having the ideas?
And that's what I mean. You need somebody to bring them to life. It doesn't necessarily have to be the person who's got the ideas. If you can get somebody to do what you want them to do, then
Yes.
You can become successful.
I agree. Just needs a good mix.
Yes. So you've grown from the heady days in the 80s to around 4.5 million, what would you attribute that to?
Our model has been sustainable growth. We're not a get rich quick type of business. We've tried to make it very steady. We've been able to try and support what we do through some investment. Now Martin's retired, the investment can be a bit more. But yeah, we've not taken any silly risks.
And what's been the biggest struggle over the last, is it 30 years, 40 years?
There's been a number of struggles.
Have they been all people-based or has it been financially based? Or is it because we've gone through, two recessions in that period?
I think possibly even three.
Three, yeah. So is it the people that have been a struggle to manage, or has it been the finances, or has it been the industry as a whole?
I think it's a bit of everything. I mean, people don't know water treatment from the outside.
It's a very unique market.
It's a very unique market. There's a lot of players in it, but you don't go through school, college, university fixed on a career in water treatment. Most people haven't heard of it. So it's hard to attract people. So that's a big challenge in itself, recruitment. Thereafter, the construction industry itself, which is where we, you know, we made our fortune, if you like. It's ruthless, it's cutthroat. I don't think it's unfair for you to expect to be paid for the work you do. However, within the construction industry, there's people that take a very different view of that. Financance has been difficult, and I think the nature of what we do too.
I think you just touched on it there as well, the recruitment model that you've got, and I've got a clear insight into how you recruit and how you bring on your staff. But do you have a particular recruitment plan, a model that works for you? I mean, what have you honed over the last few years in terms of introducing new people into the business?
Yourself aside, we tend to grow our own. We've had probably our greatest success from bringing people in at the bottom, giving them experience throughout the whole business, what we do,
yeah,
and giving them license to express themselves and find the right position for them. And you know that because you've worked with us.
Yeah,
we've had some degrees of success with recruiting, if you like, the finished product. But I think on the whole, breeding our own has been the way that we've done things, and it's worked best for us.
That old adage of you can't teach an old dog new tricks. If you're trying to recruit somebody who's got all the skills, and we had this conversation with the recruitment guys yesterday, if you've got a guy who has all the skills in the world but hasn't got the right attitude, they're just not going to succeed. You need somebody who's going to apply themselves and be ready to learn from the bottom up.
Yeah.
That's what I think anyway.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
The good thing about bringing people in without experience is they haven't got preconceived ideas of life and business, and you can mold them. And we know the type of characters that we want within the business, and it's a lot easier to mold somebody, as you say, who isn't an old dog,
yeah,
than it is an old dog.
I mean, you've been in the business for 30 years and you started at the bottom, didn't you?
I did.
So you know every area of the business. How has that helped over the years to sort of allow you to experience it from the bottom end and also use that experience to sort of be the leader at the top as well?
I think one of the key things for me is I would never try to get anybody to do something that I wouldn't be prepared to do myself or that I haven't done myself. And that builds trust from your staff in you. So having experienced the really crappy end of the business, if you like, you know, carrying people's tools, the really dirty stuff in the early days, to senior management and director, I think I've seen everything, and I can help everybody within the business along that journey, and I can relate to them.
I mean, you guys started out like Apple in the back of a garage, didn't you?
Yeah.
So
to be honest,
that's yes. Where the similarities end in terms of growth.
Sadly, yes. Yeah.
So given that you've experienced those different roles within the company, what do you see yourself? What's the ideal definition of a leader or a boss or a manager? I mean, how do you define what a leader is?
A boss, a manager, a leader, they're all different things.
Go with the boss first.
I think you need to have people's trust.
Yeah.
You need to be supportive. And there needs to be a nurturing element to being a good boss.
And a leader.
They're very difficult to define. I mean, good managers don't make good leaders and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think good leaders are somebody that can stand out there, make difficult and bold decisions and try and bring people along with them.
Do you think having the ability to make quick decisions and immediate decisions is a good trait to have as a leader? Do you think somebody who can make decisions off the bat immediately gives a sense of direction?
If they're the right decision, then of course.
But that only comes with experience.
I was going to say experience is important, and that does allow you to make those decisions quickly and get them right more often than not. Having said that, I can think of numerous examples. Don't ask me to name them, but I can think of plenty of examples where it's just the fact that one is prepared to make a decision when others won't.
Yeah.
That makes you the leader. It might be wrong, and there's plenty I've made that are wrong, but someone has to make it.
The easiest analogy you can make from the business world into the sports world is a football manager. And I would class Jurgen Klopp as a leader. and I'd class somebody such as, I don't know, Carlo Ancelotti as a boss or a manager, because they've got completely different styles. One will put an arm around a player and make them feel that he's in their court. The other will just tell the player what to do. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's classic carrot and stick.
Yeah.
I think you need both. In business, at least, you need both. I think people react differently. Depending on the individual, you have to deal with them very differently. I don't know Jurgen Klopp enough or Carlo Ancelotti enough to know whether or not they
are
or
not. You're an Arsenal
man. I'm an Arsenal man, but I mean, Klopp strikes me as somebody that, yes, he's a leader, but I think his team play for him, they trust him. So I think he's got a bit of both.
Given that Martin Hoare was an entrepreneur and had wild ideas and wasn't the best at putting things into practice, how did you learn to manage? How did you learn how to be a leader or a boss?
For the first 10 years or so with having the title of manager, I'd had zero formal training. In 30 years in the business, I've probably had no more than 6 hours of management training. That said, I think I've always been a natural leader, or somebody would naturally assume and take responsibility. I mean, throughout school and college and even now, I've played football a lot. I've always captained sides. I think you either feel comfortable in that skin or not, and I do.
Yeah, yeah. When I worked for you, I must admit, given that you're the managing director of the company, everyone seems to look up to you and look to you for a direction and a sense of what's coming next. It's very difficult to manage that at the top. And one thing that I've learned is when I was at the bottom, I thought being at the top, it's easier because you don't have to work as hard, but it's not. It's completely the opposite. You have to work twice as hard because you have to second guess every single decision you make and understand how it's going to impact person A, B, and C. And it's just a constant grind. It's really difficult.
It's certainly the loneliest place to be.
Yeah.
You've not really got anybody that you can pour those emotions out onto. It's also quite rewarding, though. I mean, there's a certain amount of autonomy because you're not answering to anybody else. So if you are that person that's comfortable in that skin, then it's a good place to be.
That's what I like now. I like having autonomy. And that, when I worked for you, that was probably the changing point in my career. When I joined Goodwater, I mean, I'd been in previous roles and the bosses were good, bad and really bad. When I joined Goodwater, there was that immediate sense of trust and sort of, you said, you do it your way, and if your way doesn't work, then I can help you. And I think that's what you need to be when you're a boss or a leader. You need to give people a sense of they can do it themselves. Give them the rope, let them see if they succeed or fly or however you want to put the analogy to it. And then if it doesn't work, then it's on your head. But it's just that fine line between giving people trust and giving them enough rope so that it doesn't sort of push themselves. And my career just lit up because I just found this zest for managing people, but I also led them, if that makes sense.
You came from a place where you were clearly frustrated.
Yeah.
In my role, I don't have the time to spend micromanaging people. I don't like micromanaging people because that puts a lot of pressure on you personally. So when you came in, it was a good fit at the time. I think it's important to let people have space. It's important to not stifle people. More often than not, if you've made the right decision in the first place, the right appointment in the first place, people surprise you. They're a lot more capable than they think they are. And you get an awful lot more back from them when they're allowed to express themselves and have freedom, et cetera. And it's the same as, I mean, you've got kids. It's no different bringing kids up. You need to let them make mistakes.
Yep.
You need to encourage them to keep trying to learn and make those mistakes and accept that that will happen.
I mean, when I joined Goodwater, one thing that really not interested me, but I'd done it before, but not to the scale that you'd done, was psychometric profiling. And you, when I had the interview, the final stage of the interview was a psychometric profile, and it was done on the discovery basis. What do you think of those?
I think they were scarily accurate. I think we need to be careful not to pigeonhole people because of what they say. As I said earlier, businesses need all types of different people.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's, you know, a psychometric of insight type where you come out as a certain color. Don't pigeonhole them, because you need supportive people. You need people good with detail. You need inspirational people. You need people that are good leaders. I think they're a really good basis for a conversation to have with people.
What I found was, I mean, I've got my psychometric profile, and on a later podcast, we've got a guest from the Colourworks who actually do the insights discovery profiles. But within Goodwater, let's say, my psychometric profile was very similar to another person's psychometric profile, but we were in completely different roles. I think based on the role that you give a person and their interests, their psychometric profile can fit in different ways. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on what interests a person. My interest is now leading and understanding businesses and making sure that they can generate growth, where this other person might just be satisfied with doing what they're doing. I think that's a different type of, it's not psychometric profiling, but it's a different type of personality.
Yeah, I mean, you could be a leader, but that doesn't necessarily need to be a leader in a big business with lots of people.
No, and that's what I mean. I think it's just how you would put yourself in that position. So your people are massive to the business. I know that because yep. I was invested heavily in whilst I was there. What do you do to get your people to buy into your vision, and what do you do to sort of get them understanding the message from the top?
You need to engage them in the process and the decision-making processes. If people are peripheral and they don't feel involved and you don't engage with them, you're going to end up with disaffected staff very quickly. So we set out an agenda every year, as you know, at an AGM. We have plans. Some of those plans are followed through and they happen and they have great results. Some of them don't. But we share that vision with people very openly. We engage them in the process. We have regular meetings with people. We listen to them. I wouldn't say we're perfect, but I don't think we have a doors closed policy, a them and us policy. It's very inclusive. So I think that's probably the best way to try and get people aligned with your strategy and to work for you. And when I look at the people we've got in the business, I'm happy that we've got the vast majority that are on side and on board, except you who left.
I left not because I was frustrated or I think it was just an opportunity for me that I just couldn't turn down. And in order to progress my career, not that Goodwater was limiting, far from it. It was a great opening for me and it was a great position. And that's what I like about business now. Before I joined Goodwater, whenever I left the job, there was this sort of sour taste, or there was a bitter feeling that you'd left the business, you've left us, you've left the collective. I feel welcome when I come back to Goodwater now. And quite clearly you're on the podcast, but I think it's really important to maintain those relationships in and outside of business, because you're a family at the end of the day.
You're totally right. I think experience has told me that it's not personal when somebody wants to leave. The most important person in life is yourself. You need to make sure that you're happy. You're no good to anybody else around you if you're not happy and you're not following the path that you want to follow.
Yeah.
You're just going to be frustrated. And life's too short. I think somebody told me once that, never shit on people on the way up because they're just the same people that you're going to need on the way back down again. And it's true. And, you know, you're a good example. I can think of others that the people have left. Some people have left under not great circumstances that still I'd have a pint with, and that's important to me. You've got to be able to look yourself in the mirror. You've got to do what's right for the business and for yourself and for other people. And just because someone leaves doesn't mean they're a bad person.
And that's what I think. Intention is everything within business. If your intent is pure and you're not doing it for malicious reasons, or you're not trying to let somebody go because you need to balance the books or anything like that, if you've got a pure intent, then it just sort of works. I mean, I've let people go in your business. I've let people go in the business I'm in now. And I've still remained on good terms, because if you explain it and people understand why things are happening, and that's again goes back to the transparency. Leading through transparency is core, I think, to any business. If people understand and know why you're doing something, whether it's good or bad, then they'll buy into it and they understand.
Yeah. I mean, I've one of the worst things I've ever had to do in business is to make somebody redundant. Thankfully, over the years, it's not something I've had to do many times. But in the last recession, I had to let three or four people go purely because the numbers didn't stack up. It was an awful process, but we were very transparent in it. And to a man, as they left, they shook my hand. They understood it. And I'd like to think if we encountered each other in the street now, we'd be on decent speaking terms.
So the people that you do still have in the business, they obviously form a unique culture. And business-to-business selling within the water treatment industry can be cutthroat, can be difficult. How do you keep your team together? I mean, how would you sum up the culture within your company? How would you sum up what you do in order to support them? And how would you describe what Good Water is about?
Well, firstly, businesses are run by ordinary people. And I'm an ordinary person. All the people that we've employed have been ordinary people. We tend to recruit on personality. If you don't get the right person in your business, it can be really destructive. So get the right person in the first place, you're halfway there. And just be decent. You know, there's no magic formula. Just be decent with people and they'll repay you.
I mean, yes, you've got ordinary people in your business, but how do you recognise the ones that shine above all everybody else?
Well, we have an appraisal system, a performance management system, which is it's very integral to what we do. It's clear, it's unambiguous of what we expect from people, but it's very much behaviour based. So when people have good behaviours, generally speaking, they perform, and when they perform well, they rank high.
Yeah.
And during our annual review process, we recognise the real standout people. Now, over the years, some people who you wouldn't expect to rise have done fantastically well. In fact, the person who was our last outstanding achievement winner was you know, at some points could easily have left the business. You know, things didn't go well. So giving people sort of clear opportunities, places they can move to if things aren't working out, that's all part of it. But yeah, recognition, I think, is a key thing. Every year we bonus people on merit. I think it's important to have a meritocracy, and that's what that's what we have.
Where do you see the water treatment industry in, let's say, next 5 to 10 years? Where is it going?
Where would I like it to go, or where is it going?
Both.
I would like it to have some more stringent control. There are too many companies out there that just start up that give the industry a bad name. So I'd like there to be more control over the business. We're obviously heavily invested in Legionella prevention, so I would dread for there to be a cure for Legionella. although it would be nice, I guess. I think business in general, it doesn't matter if it's just our business, but in general, I think connectivity, digitization, communication, that's going to be key in future. But I don't think you're ever going to completely get rid of people. They're going to be needed in every business. So whilst technology is going to be a big player, people are still going to be the most important thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I was having a conversation yesterday. 50% of the jobs in 5 to 10 years' time don't exist now. Where do you see those jobs coming? Not just for the water treatment industry, but in general, where are those jobs? If you could look into a crystal ball and say, this is going to happen, where would you say it's going?
Couch that slightly differently. I've got two young kids, a 9 and a 6-year-old. So the jobs that we're talking about, the 50%, they don't exist. How do you prepare a child for the future, which is how I'm looking at it? I have no idea. I guess you look at the jobs that have to exist.
Does that scare you as a parent?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing as a parent you can do is you can make your children as rounded, as confident as possible. Help steer them into industries that perhaps do exist.
Yeah.
Legal, medicine, science and tech.
I mean, my parents tried to avoid me getting involved with computers and limited the amount of time that I had in front of a screen. I don't want you to give parent advice on the podcast, but is that something that was instilled in you? Is it something that you do? Is it something that, because it's a fine line, knowing that our children are going to have they're literally going to live their lives through the medium of the internet or the screens. Do you limit the time, or is it something that's not an afterthought, but a thought in your head that actually they do need this exposure, but I also want to rein it in a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, it's different from my experience. I mean, computers back then, 30, 40 plus years ago weren't really what they are now. I do limit my kids' screen time, not because I don't want them to use screens, but because I don't want them to become couch potatoes. I want them to be active. I've always done sport. My wife is very into sport. You've done sport. It plays, plays a big part of the molding of an individual is to be involved in team games and individual pursuits. And if they're fit and healthy, that does tend to lead to somebody that's also going to be good in the workplace. So I limit them so that they don't become physically lazy.
And is it to do with the social ability as well? I find I work as a mentor as well, and I find that the social skills can often be limited. And that's not a knock on the current generation, but I think because people are in front of screens and because they live their lives with tech speak, and this is a wide sweeping generalization, but I think I limit my kids on their devices, and that's mainly so that they have social interactions and they have actual interactions with real people. Because when you come into the employment world, I think being able to talk to somebody, look them face to face like we're doing now, and have a meaningful conversation is massively important. You may not know the job, you may not understand the job. There's that fake it till you make it element. If you can have that conversation, hold the conversation, be a person, I think that's massively more important than sitting behind a screen and running a pivot table on Excel.
Yeah, I mean, just again, through the education system, just give them as much exposure to everything as you possibly can. For me, bring kids up in an adult environment is a good thing, because they learn to communicate with adults then, and limit the screen time, just simply because you don't want them to become, you know, insular, couch potato, you name the cliche.
There's wide extremes on both ends. You've got the people who are completely averse to screens and do not entertain the fact that they should use their phone in order to get a job and all that sort of stuff. But there's also the other extreme, which is let's sit in our bedrooms for 16 hours a day playing Call of Duty. We want our kids to sit in the middle and have exposure to both. And I think that's responsible parenting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Yeah, it's a no-brainer to me.
So we're just coming to the end of the podcast. And what we've done on every other podcast is we ask the guests 5 questions. So I'll start at the bottom this time. So of the 4 social networks, which one would you prefer? Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter?
None of them. I think they're an environment where people create fake personas. I don't think they're real. I think they're quite dangerous. The one you didn't have on there is WhatsApp, and I'm a WhatsApp man every time.
See, I'm a big social media advocate, and that's because you can brand yourself in a particular way. You can personal branding, I believe, is going to become the next thing that is taught. I mean, many years ago it was CV writing, but I think personal branding is the way it's going. It's an online version of a CV. Do you think that people could brand themselves into a job, but also brand themselves out of a job?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I like social media, which is why I asked the question. and I like the way that you can self-promote and build a business literally from nothing. I suppose there's 2 different schools of thought. You can do it the old school way, which is through referrals and the way that Goodwater have traditionally done it, and that's build your business through just organic means. There's a quick route to everything now, and it's the 21st century. And I think the quick route is social media and online. I mean, you guys have just launched your new website, haven't you?
We have.
How's it going?
It's early days. It's been launched about 2 weeks. It's infinitely better than the other one.
Yeah.
The old one, it's got to move. It's got to be compatible with all devices. I mean, I'm no expert in web design. My brother, actually, one of the co-directors, has designed the whole thing. He's done a fantastic job. So it's important. You have to have an online presence, without a doubt. If you haven't, then you're way behind the curve.
Yeah, you have to have a face online. Yeah. And I've gone through the process with saleschange.co.uk, and designing that website myself, it's a torture in itself.
Yeah, content's the big issue.
Yeah, yeah. You need to generate the content, but that content also needs to have value. Because if it's not generating value, it's just words, and it means nothing. Yeah. So the next question is, what did you want to be when you grew up? And this is what your kids are going to listen to.
Well, like every young boy, I wanted to be a professional footballer, but I wasn't good enough. And then I wanted to be an accountant. I did actually study accountancy. I'm glad it's not a career I chose. I do use accounting quite a lot because of what I do in business, but to just be an out-and-out accountant.
Have you ever used Pythagoras' theorem in business?
Pythagoras or Pythagoras?
Pythagoras, that's what I said, wasn't it?
The square of the hypotenuse on a right-angled triangle?
Yes.
Of course I do. Liar. We're in an engineering business.
Maybe.
Yeah.
What was the worst job that you could ever think of doing?
Data entry of any kind.
Monotony,
boring. I like numbers, not that much.
Which leader do you look up to the most?
Not necessarily a leader, but the person that I most admire would be Sir David Attenborough. I think he's a hell of a guy, one of the most interesting people I've ever seen. I think what he's saying these days about climate change and the planet certainly resonate with me, and they should do. And I think we're at a real critical point in the existence of human beings on the planet.
Yeah.
I think we need to listen to him.
And Greta?
I've got my views on Greta, but I think ultimately the message that's coming out is the right one. We need to look after our planet. Look, I'm probably too old for it to affect me massively now, but my kids aren't, and their kids. So yeah, we're definitely at a tipping point that we need to take some action.
I agree. And so the final question on the podcast, and the one that I was looking forward to the most, because I know that we've bounced back and forth different ideas whilst we work together. What's the last book that you read?
It's actually Johan Cruyff's autobiography was the last book I read.
All right, okay. Yeah. So no, and what's the last business book? Because this is what I was most interested in, because we used to bounce ideas off.
Yeah. Not so much a business book, but I've reread a book called Bounce, which is a book which is very much about 10,000 hours of practice to makes you an expert. And it's really good in terms of psychology. So yeah, not a business book per se, but there are certainly bits in there that relate to business.
Perfect. Thanks, Martin.
No worries.
Whoa. Don't go anywhere yet. Julio, tell people where they can get more information.
If you like the podcast, go visit saleschange.co.uk.
That's good, but you said .do.
Saleschange.co.uk. Why don't you head... No. It's bad. It's bad. Go to saleschange.co.uk and... saleschange.co.uk and subscribe to our incredible newsletter. Thanks for listening.